Hello, and welcome to the King Hero IndyCar Podcast with Kirby and Justin. Kirby, how are you?
Doing well, Justin. How about yourself?
I am good. Kirby, ready to jump in all things IndyCar?
Let's do it.
Why can't a team who has it all going keep the band together? It's like the great bands of our time that all seem to break up. What is it in human nature that causes us to do this?
Ego, boredom, just time sometimes just tears things apart, doesn't it?
I guess, because I just can't believe that Red Bull just can't keep it together with such a dominating group. And now, rumors are that Adrian Newey, who's probably the most valuable player on that entire team, might be leaving. It's just crazy.
Well, to be fair, he's been there like 20 years, hasn't he?
It's been a while.
It's not like a 4 or 5 year dalliance or anything. So, I don't know what his motivation is, and probably never will. But, sometimes 20 years is more than enough time at any one stop along the way.
Yeah, but you can't help but feeling like this is being driven by all that ridiculousness with Christian Horner and Helmut Marko and Verstappen, Jan Verstappen. You can't help but just feel like this is all part and parcel of that.
Well, I mean, what was the guy? It was a Dieter. Was that the guy's name that owned everything?
Yes.
When somebody like that goes away, all the tensions that he's suppressed and held together over the years, they surface and the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, it's a bit like my business, actually, every time I leave.
Exactly. Just every time you wonder about such things, think back to your own business and the soap opera you create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people just can't behave themselves. No. Speaking of Red Bull, a developer of the AeroScreen. Now, I know. Can they ever do anything right?
No, they can't. They just can't.
Now everybody's head's roasting off, and it's not even hot yet.
Yeah, it's a mystery, isn't it?
I realize that it's really easy to, armchair quarterback it and, pick holes at, but there seems to be a pattern here which can't be ignored with IndyCar, right? Introduce new things and screw it up. I mean, you can't, I'm sure there's all good reasons why it happened and blah, 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 but it always comes down to they just don't test enough.
Exactly. It's all CFD, right? I mean, CFD and, just formulas on a piece of paper. But, it's remarkable. And you were hearing about it even before, Will Power had his clogged up, hose filter there for his particular helmet. But you were hearing about it earlier in the weekend and maybe even at Long Beach. They had those in Long Beach too, right?
Yeah, he was even talking about it there, like how his head was roasting off.
And that was not that hot a day for Long Beach either.
Correct.
And it's as I was watching Power, his face all red and Power McLaughlin that had his visor up there pointing out during the race.
Power.
I just kept thinking the same thing, like, can you guys not figure these things out? I mean, this was supposed to be an improvement, right? And all of a sudden
it's worse.
It's worse.
Kirb, I don't know if you caught it, but there's been a little undercurrent in the paddock about Scott Dixon and the potentiality of him actually not being the master of, gas savings, but maybe being the master of cheating. What say you?
Well, that was the irony of this whole Penske thing, right? Is it kind of freed everybody up to unleash all the other conspiracy theories they had about other people who've been successful. So I thought that was kind of funny and funny in an ironic way.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Chip hasn't said too much, because it's coming his way soon.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a lot of people that don't believe. Let's put it that way. How's that?
I don't know if they all know what they're talking about, but it's their moment to shine anyway, right?
Yeah. But much like the push to pass controversy, there's those that believe and those that don't.
When they get to talk anonymously to all these reporters, it's easy just to spout off. And yeah, you wonder how much they believe in what they're saying and how much they just want to stir things up and cause Penske trouble.
Sure. Curb, I guess I do want to mention the push to pass thing. I want to make this an event for all of our podcasts. But I'm interested to hear from you, kind of knowing everything that you know and having been to the Newgarden press conference, you know, what your views are. Before you launch into your keen insight on the issue, I would like to, as I don't often do, give a shout out to another podcast. And this is the Hinch and Rossi podcast, who I think made some pretty good points in their last podcast about this controversy. I shouldn't say they made good points, but I think where they were uniquely qualified to comment on it is you had a couple of drivers talking about it, right?
Right.
And fairly early in the piece, like, you know, brand new news, I think, at, you know, the day they did their podcast or pretty close. So I thought there were some interesting comments that they said. One of them that they said, and I agree with, is that if any driver found out he had access to that and thought he had an advantage, every driver would use it.
Right.
Like there wasn't even a question. Right. I wouldn't use it because I know it was wrong. There was not even a question. They said every driver would use it. And I believe that. I think if any driver thought he had that advantage and knew it and others didn't, he would use that.
Now, I don't think that's I don't think they mean that in a premeditated way either. I mean, I think they just
mean that in the car,
if they found it working all of a sudden, they keep pushing the button because it's working. And if for no other reason, then they assume everybody else has it too. And if they aren't using it, that's their problem.
But I think they would have gone even as far as saying, like, if they knew they had it and nobody else didn't, even while they were driving, they'd still use it, right?
Yeah. But I mean, one of the rationalizations was, in the heat of the moment, you discover you have it, you assume everybody has access to it, even if they don't think they should, right?
Of course, but I think what they're saying, and again, I agree with, I mean, I keep repeating myself here. I think what they're really saying is, yeah, they take it. They're not even thinking about it. They take that advantage no matter what.
Right, right.
Okay. And I think this goes back to cheating in auto racing as just kind of endemic in what it is no matter what. And people take a advantage that they think they can get away with. Having said that, so why don't you go ahead? You watched the Newgarden press conference. You've seen all the commentary that there is to see. Tell me, where are you? Let's just put it to bed, Curb, with you. Where do you stand on this? What happened?
Well, as I'm watching and listening to Newgarden talk, I'm seeing the wisdom in putting out prepared statements such as McLaughlin's and Powers. because he just talked himself in circles. Honestly, I'm certainly more Pollyannish than you are, and I was prepared to accept pretty much what Tim Cindric was peddling, right, in terms of his story for how this came to be. And Scott McLaughlin's prepared statement says, hey, I hit that button once out of habit and didn't really do me any good anywhere, but you know, I had no idea it would work. Will Power didn't use it at all. He had no idea that they had pushed a pass. It's all laid out there for him. Even if what he's saying is true and he's saying it's too hard to believe, I just don't believe what he's saying in terms of, hey, somehow my car and my crew, the team and my crew, convinced ourselves that we could use push to pass starting at the first race of the year on starts and restarts, or at least restarts. And it defies belief, I think. They had a rational explanation, I think, that could have been understood and grudgingly accepted. But to say that Tim Cindric and everybody else on his crew knew that you could do this, but Tim Cindric didn't bother to tell the 3 car or the 12 car that they could use it, doesn't make sense. And what I wrote down here on my notes was, How smart really is Joseph Newgarden? It didn't make any sense as he was saying it. It didn't make any sense. All the reading I could do over the weekend to get everybody else's perspectives on it. They ask McLaughlin on the weekend. He says, no, I don't know where they got that from. We certainly didn't think that. And I don't know. I didn't see any comments from Power on it. But everything they've said from the Penske angle, I believe is probably correct. But this excuse he gave about the whole team knowing or believing that they could use it doesn't make any sense at all. Doesn't add up.
Okay. By the way, excellent use of the dog barking track behind your commentary there. It's not quite as good as the roaring engines that some others use. It's a great annoyance.
You can actually hear that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're on a whole other level of the house.
But anyways,
my apologies.
No apologies. Excellent use. I mean, that's the new trend in podcasts these days is to put a very annoying backtrack so you can barely, you know, understand what's being said. Right. I kind of am right there with you. It's like I want to believe the Penske angle. There's a lot of the Penske angle, like just the evidence, like the non-usage of Power, the non-usage of McLaughlin, you know, kind of reinforce my willingness to kind of believe all that. But I don't believe two things. I don't believe Joseph Newgarden thought that he could use it and that, you know, somehow the rules had changed. I don't believe him when he says that. That's and I think I've got plenty of company in the paddock on that. And I don't believe Tim Cendrick either, fully. I believe a lot of it, I believe he's probably telling 95% of the truth. But it's that critical 5% that he's kind of fudging the numbers a bit. And I guess that's where I land on it. Him, Newgarden, and various members of the Penske team were cheating and knew it. And that's it. I don't think it's any more. I mean, in my mind, it's no more complex than that. I think even within the team, like maybe they were kind of just keeping it a secret so Joe New could have it. I mean, keep in mind, you know, it's Cendrick on Joe New's stand, right?
Exactly.
So I would think if anybody's eyebrows raised, it's probably Will Power McLaughlin's like, why didn't you tell us that why wasn't that information disseminated to us? But little cabal between Cendrick and Newgarden, and yeah, they were going to see how long it lasted without giving it the proper amount of thought, right? Just taking the easy route just because it's there and it's right there in front of you. You can't resist it.
So you're saying they discovered the mistake and decided to take advantage of it. They didn't premeditate the plan from the beginning.
I think that's where I come. I think it just happened in their lap. They're like, oh, that's interesting. And kept going with it.
And we won't tell anybody else so we can keep this circle tight. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And if they're getting away with it, you know, they got away with it once and they're like, okay, well, this looks like we might be able to keep this little party going. You know, what are they going to say to us? I mean, it wasn't our fault we didn't deactivate it, right? Even though it was. I'm sure that in their minds, like, it was forbidden fruit. And, you know, Eve ate that damn apple.
Okay, well.
Was it Eve or Adam? I think maybe it was Eve that was encouraging Adam to eat it.
She got Adam to eat the apple, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's wow.
Or
there
she
you go.
Eat it for, yeah.
No, I think she was telling him to do it, and he did it.
I think you're right.
Things haven't changed even since the beginning of time.
No. But let me ask you this then.
Yeah.
How embarrassed and upset do you think Roger Penske really is?
I think he's very embarrassed. So I would put that on the epically embarrassed category. What was the other part? Upset?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's upset because of his embarrassment.
Somebody's not telling the truth. Even if you say one of them is innocent, one of them isn't. Somebody's not.
Well, I don't think Joseph Newgard's telling the truth.
Right.
Look, the mind's a powerful thing, Curb. He may have convinced himself he's telling the truth, but he's telling the truth.
Yeah. And he's the most obvious one not telling the truth. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, him and Cindric, yeah.
Okay, but I think he's more obvious than Cindric.
Yes. Yeah, he's even worse.
So,
and you know what? I'll be honest with you. I mean, on the basis of what Hinch and Rossi said, he probably, let's assume for the sake of this conversation, he's not telling the truth. He probably would have been better off saying, you know what? It showed up there. I did what I shouldn't have done. I used it. And I think of course, people are going to be like, that's terrible or whatever. But any race car driver would have been like, yeah, I would have too.
Well, I mean, a couple of other things, that Rossi and Hinch said that could have helped his side of the story. A, it didn't matter because he was dominating that weekend anyway. So he would have won with or without that, according to Rossi. B, they both, unprompted by anybody else, said, you know, Newgard, Joseph brags all the time about how he hits that button all the time, whether it's activated or not, just in case it goes. Cases work, and he apparently has a reputation in the paddock for doing so, just that. And so, again, Cindric's story, those kind of comments, it's all there for him to be innocent, to how I made an innocent mistake, just like everybody here is talking about. And he comes up with this cockamamie story about me and my whole team. We thought it was legal from the beginning of the season, you know. And I'm the leader of the team. I take responsibility for it. Well, you know, Tim Cindric's the leader of that team, right? I mean, do you think... Yeah. Newgard's the leader, not Tim Cindric. Because if you feel like you have to make a statement, if you're Roger Penske, you got to make a statement. Who are you going to can? Joseph Newgard or Tim Cindric?
It depends who you want to, you know, pin the blame on.
Well,
I think it's easier to pin the blame on Newgard. He's just a dumb driver.
He's a dumb driver. That's made an obvious... seems to have more obviously lied than anybody else in this equation. And he also happens to be up for his contract also happens to expire this year.
Yeah.
So I don't know how upset Penske really is. You know, Cindric has made the statement that if there was a name out there that had done this intentionally and we knew it, you know, they'd be gone already. I don't, you know, that's a nice statement to make, but, easy one to hide behind too. And I'm just curious, you know, it was interesting that they had an article out today, I think, about Newgarden's working on his contract extension with Penske. And it'll be a curious story to follow.
Well, I think you got that aspect of it all wrong. Okay. Newgarden probably has the goods on somebody. He's probably going to get an extremely favorable contract at Penske.
Well, then that means that Penske isn't that upset.
No, because he's going to have to pay him more. Just shut him up.
Okay, but he's not that upset about the cheating. He's upset. He's upset that he's embarrassed publicly.
Yes.
He's not actually that upset about the act itself.
Again, I'm going to refer you to Mark Donohue's book, and you make your own conclusions.
Well, I didn't get to read it because it's sitting in a South American hovel somewhere.
Well... I can't. What? Where is it?
You left it on some coffee table in South America.
I did?
Yeah, we took it to Colombia with you and never brought it back.
Oh. Yeah, you're probably right. That and 6,000 cash.
I'm more upset about the book, damn it.
Well, go buy it. I'm sure you can buy it. But, okay. Anyways, I refer to the book. I think if you read the book, it kind of gives you a very good judgment on the whole issue. You mentioned there's so many things I could talk about they, and we haven't talked about they in a while, but
that's the gift that never stops giving. But
let's just go ahead. Yeah, exactly. Let's just pile in for a second. Okay.
Yeah.
In reference to the Joseph Newgard push to pass controversy, they stated he doesn't know Joseph anymore. He knew him back in the day, but he distanced himself, saying he doesn't know him anymore, and was very keen on him hanging his head in shame.
I must have missed this article.
I think that was more verbal, but it was
on a podcast or something.
Yeah, it was great.
I've been trying to break that habit.
I love the statement that he doesn't know him anymore. So already distanced himself from him. I just don't know that guy. If I still knew him, maybe he'd behave differently. But he should be hanging. I thought that was very funny. The other thing about I know both you and I noted was the great article title about why is Pat O'Ward so good at barber. Right. And that was the title of the video that he put out and that they put out. And that guy drove like an absolute moron at barber. He hit at least three people, including his own teammate.
For the second week in a row.
Right.
My note actually was, should Pato hang it up? Because his drive reminded me of Helio at Laguna Seca last year.
I mean, they might be cursed. Because the other person that he had a little video with, put the arm around and, going back to what somebody said in the comic sections of one of his former, new loves, is he attaches himself like a barnacle to every new driver coming through, which I still remember because it's so good. The poor Teo Pocher is now a victim of they and his barnacleism.
Sure seems like it, doesn't it? Although Teddy Porkchop was the number one driver for Arrow McLaren on the weekend. So. I did think it was funny to see that poor Teo had been sucked into the qualifying video.
Yeah, and then immediately found himself completely irrelevant in the next race.
And he was a frequent guest on those videos last year, but young David Malukas, look what happened to him.
Yeah, like I said, the guy's cursed. You know what you need to do? Stay away from him.
I was just shocked, though, watching O'Ward on Sunday and driving that race.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I don't know what he was on, but it wasn't good.
I am not happy where I am, and I'm going to make sure everybody knows it or something.
I think you can get in that mindset driving where you're driving so bad that you try to make up for it and it just gets worse. Yeah. And my guess is that's where young Pato found himself on that day, like playing tennis. Sometimes you start getting mad at yourself and you try to make things happen and just, it just goes worse. And I think driving's the same way. It was a great race, I thought.
It was very entertaining. Yeah, no, it was one of the more entertaining races they've had in a while.
Yeah, I mean, long time. Long time, in my opinion. Yeah, that was a really good race, really interesting. It was refreshing, and I'm sure you probably feel this way as well, that the non-fuel savers won.
Oh, exactly. Again, the dreaded fuel-saving word came out so early. It was just remarkable, and based on recent history, you figured, those guys are going to win again, and boring all the way to the end. But fortunately, all those extra cars that Zach Brown complains about being on track helped to make it an interesting day.
Well, I suppose you could say that. Townsend Bell, I'm going to go back to what I said the last podcast. He just kills interest by mentioning fuel savings. It was like he was disappointed that the fuel savers weren't going to win.
Yeah.
You could see the disappointment when Palau was, obviously the strategy was falling apart. God, I mean, I don't know what's in Townsend's head. It's like, stop talking about fuel savings, man. It's just not necessary, especially in a race where it's an absolute abject failure.
Well, and it's early enough in the race that they didn't have to commit to it, right? I mean, you could throw it out there as a potential strategy choice, but then go back to the racing.
Yeah, but at one point he had all but crowned Palau the winner of the race.
Yeah, because you assume there isn't going to be any more chaos. It's all going to go straight to form the rest of the race, and fuel savers will win. But other people out there trying to do their own things, and lo and behold, you get a bunch of extra yellows, and that throws a lot of, you know, kinks into people's plans and gives other people a chance that you thought were out of the race. So it was,
it kept
evolving and changing and didn't settle into a static event. And it was entertaining. It made it really entertaining.
Yeah. So Townsend, just shut the hell up about that. Yeah. Like,
and really, I was disappointed. They were talking about how fast Pelot was. They don't know what happened to him in qualifying, but he was so fast at the warm up and blah, blah, blah. And he made up a bunch of spots, you know, before the yellow came out, the first yellow. Yeah, I would have much rather seen him fly, you know, let's set him free and let him race instead of sitting there trying to manage his fuel the rest of the way.
Yeah, well, he got a bad, hindsight's obviously 20/20, but he definitely got a bad strategy call there, because Rosenquist said it best, like, we had our, you know, we were going to save fuel and we stuck to our strategy from day one. And that's why he ended up, you know, advancing in the last few laps, whereas Palau was worse. You know, he kind of went for it at the beginning, then switched strategies and it killed him.
Right. And, you know, if you are the fastest car on the track, why do you want to do a fuel saving strategy?
Yeah, another great point. Like I said, I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback that one, but at the end of the day, Townsend Bell just needs to stop crowning winners at, you know, the first 10 laps of a race. He needs to stop talking about fuel savings and just start reporting on what's going on as it happens.
Yeah.
It was also refreshing to see Scott Dixon screw up.
It was funny when Hinch made the comment, well, I'm curious to see how he turns that into a winning strategy. Willpower, you know, went off at 5 and 6 there.
Yep.
Unprompted, just on his own. And fortunately, they weren't throwing, you know, penalty flags every other lap.
I agree. Good officiating overall.
I have a question.
Yep.
How is the F1ization of the Arrow McLaren team working out for them, do you think?
It's a very snarky question, Kerb. Very snarky.
Well, I mean, they're the only IndyCar team with a team principal. They're the only IndyCar team with a sporting director. You know, their team principal is a guy who was a pit side engineer before he got to Arrow McLaren. Now he's running a whole organization. You know, it just seems like they're more worried about style over substance there.
I think this is a transitional year for them. I think it has been since the beginning. I mean, you just look at their driver lineup and you see transitional year, with Pato being the only kind of anchor to that. But I think Rossi was kind of like, well, if he starts kicking ass and taking names, we'll keep him. If not, you know, it'll get us through to the period when we can get somebody better. I think Malukas, exact same thing. So I think this is, I think they're playing a long game, and I think this is part of it. I think this is part of the long game.
Okay, so you think it's an investment in the future that's going to pay off?
Yeah, just like it did in Formula One for them. It took years, and there were same snarky comments being made about them a couple years ago in F1, and they're doing pretty damn well now. So you can take your snark, and we'll see where they are next year.
Okay. All right. Well, we're on the subject of Formula One. Did you see that they announced a new 24/7 free F1 channel in America?
I did not.
It's going to be available
on the CW.
No, on Amazon Freevee and some couple other stations. You know, I guess 2 points I have about that. One, an example of Formula One investing in a market where they want to succeed. And I can't imagine it's a financial winner for them, but it'll continue their project to make inroads in America and build themselves up in this market. And it's an example of the kind of investment that we often criticize IndyCar for not making. So kudos to them for doing that, even if I'm rooting against them. Secondly, in that article, they claimed that they were creating this channel in order to serve their 42+ million fans in America. What do you think about that number of 42 million American fans?
Sounds a little high.
Given they get about $1 million to $1.3 million on a given broadcast.
Broadcast. Yeah.
So seemed a little ambitious, a little high, but I guess that's what marketing people do, right?
Again, Curb, you will never be a marketing person. You're far too grounded in reality. That is not your forte. So
trust me, I grumble about marketing all the time because I don't understand it. So
that's very clear.
No. But we agree that's a suspect number, and
it's everything in marketing is.
Okay, and I'm giving them kudos for launching this channel, so I'm not totally off base on the subject. But
all right, well, I
think
what I would say to that is, I agree with you. The other thing I would say to that is, we glazed over it last podcast, but I got to revisit it because the Long Beach television ratings were abysmal,
yes.
Like scary abysmal. And that is just a disaster. It's a disaster for IndyCar. It's a disaster for IndyCar right now. And if that wasn't a wake up call to those knuckleheads, then nothing is. That has to be, you know, that has to be their 9/11.
I guess that's one more bit of education as you go on working on your next TV deal is you got to set a few markers, right? They're not going to put the Indy 500 on USA Network if Long Beach is your second, but you got to figure out what your hallmark events are and say, these got to be, you can't decide to put Long Beach on the USA Network. It's the second biggest race in North America as far as IndyCar racing goes. And to allow themselves to be put in a position where that gets stuck on a non-sports channel is a mistake, a huge mistake, and they need to correct it going forward, and they need to think a little more forward on other areas that they need to protect themselves against in the future.
I'll tell you one thing they should do is they should have a female mannequin fall off a bridge at every race.
It's like a video game, right? It stirs things up.
Was I the only one a little bit aroused by that?
Well, I think Townsend Bell suggested that James Hinchcliffe was too.
I don't know what it was about that, but I mean, I'm like, yeah.
Well, her blouse was flying open. That's what
I don't know what it was. But I'll have to admit backing up the video a couple more times than I should have on that.
Well, you didn't have to because they kept showing it over and over and over.
Well, they should because that was worth it in my book. I mean, that's way better than watching Pato run Scott Dixon off in the corner in Long Beach.
I like the part where the car runs over her arms.
Wow. So. Yeah, that was something. I'll tell you one thing that I don't need to see any more of, Curb.
Yes.
That's Ben Bretzman with his hat off.
I'm sure there's plenty worse domes in that paddock besides his. So I'm not.
It's pretty bad. I mean, you know, the television does no help to a dome, right? And he's got the kind of the long hair on the back that's standing straight up. It's not a good look. And I noticed he put a hat on at the end of the race, which he should just keep that on. That's just my advice to Ben Bretzman.
Okay. There are plenty of bad domes in that product, I promise. In that paddock,
I mean, there's bad domes anywhere, including mine. So I'm not gonna, I'm not accusing of a dome. I just you gotta know what you have, right?
Right. Okay.
Stick with it. Another horrendous, crappy podium, Curb. Did you notice that?
Well, I've seen worse, but yeah, it wasn't great.
It looked like they took the one from Thermal, painted it black, and then put it in front of a backdrop, but it wasn't much better.
But the other thing is, they don't even bother to show them getting on the podium.
Yeah,
because right?
There's nobody there. It's embarrassing. There's nobody there. There's like 20 people around clapping, and the podium's like it couldn't have been more than.
Well, don't forget, they've got the confetti machine they borrowed from the local high school. But yeah, I'm like, not only did I notice the podium, but I mean, I assume you watched on Peacock like I did.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the extended post-race show. It's not like you're under time constraint to get out to the, the golf tournament or something. And they still don't bother to show the podium presentation. I don't get it.
Well, I don't think the optics are any good. And I think that's why they avoid it.
Well, They've never avoided bad optics before, have they? They show plenty of bad optics.
Well, maybe they're smart enough not to. But yeah, it was. You could tell it was terrible.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the one thing that I did find a little bit shocking, and I recognized her straight away when they went to Marcus Armstrong's pit box. Did you notice what I noticed? And I mean, they commented on it, so you probably did.
Of course.
But there was Lewis Hamilton's performance coach, the lady who I've seen carrying his, helmet around like everywhere. I mean, like she didn't leave his side for years.
They made a big deal about it.
Well,
I don't get the transition. I mean, I'd get it. Lewis Hamilton had to be paying her a mint compared to what she could get from Marcus Armstrong, right?
Yeah, I you would think so.
An interesting career change for her. I mean, I know that she and Hamilton parted ways, and then Armstrong called her. It's not like he recruited her away from Hamilton, but I mean, still, you would think with Hamilton on your resume for an extended period of time, you'd have plenty of opportunities to go extend your career somewhere else.
Yeah, Angela Cullen. And I was shocked to see her there because I so used to seeing her just kind of anytime Hamilton was anywhere around the pits or something, there she was, walking around. There she was. She was everywhere with him. Maybe that's why she left. But at the end of the day, it was kind of shocking to see her as Marcus Armstrong's coach. I mean, wow. Curb, one person who won't be needing her as a performance coach will be Little Dave.
I think he needs a bicycling coach.
Apparently. Left brake, right brake. We've heard to this coming. It's now here. He's gone. I'm not blaming McLaren. I don't know if you are, but it's hard to fault them at this point.
No. Supposedly part of the reasoning was they thought it would put them in legal jeopardy later in the season or something. It comes down to what they said. We don't know when he's coming back. We don't want to be playing these games the rest of the season. They've been fortunate that the beginning of the season is so spread out, right? The events are so far apart. But once you hit Indy and right after Indy, it's Detroit and a bunch of races in June and July. They don't have time to play musical chairs with drivers. So they got to get it all sorted out ahead of time. And I don't blame him for that. It's unfortunate for him. We've worried on his behalf in previous episodes and nothing's changed now. But hopefully he'll get another opportunity. I don't know if it'll be a paid driver like he was this year, but with his father's backing, I'm sure he can get another ride next year.
Yeah, I think the market with so many teams and apparent numbers that they're going to have, the driver's market for him should be okay. I think he'll come out okay.
I'm going to, based on Rhino's VK side pods the last couple of races, I'm going to predict right now that he'll be at Ed Carpenter Racing next year.
You don't think much of Renus's performance.
No, I'm saying he doesn't have any sponsors on the side of his car.
Oh, sorry.
And I think it'll be an HMD Chevy at ECR Racing next year.
Could be. I think Renus is actually having a pretty good year. He's kind of showing himself to be okay.
I don't know if I'm convinced, but I think he probably wants to see if the grass is greener somewhere else, and I think there'll probably be some people that give him a chance. Carpenter cars are usually strong at the 500, and he is qualified well there, even if he hasn't sealed the deal during the race. I think it is time for him to see if the grass is greener somewhere else for him.
Yeah. Curb, before we move on to picks for Indy, anything more you want to say about anything?
No, not really.
I suppose we should shout out Linus Lundqvist for his third.
Yeah, that was a impressive result. Ferrucci had probably his best race off.
Ferrucci was on fire. He was on fire.
He was on fire. Hopefully that means that the Foyt team is getting a little benefit from their association with Penske.
And we got Colton Herta, which it's very strange, is leading the championship right now.
Yeah, he was nowhere yesterday either, like most of his team. So, yeah, I was a little surprised to see that, too. The shakeup in the standings there probably contributed.
Oh, huge to him. But still, the fact that he's there. And if Will Power hadn't lost his 10 points, which was net 2 points, he would be leading the championship.
Well, I thought he was going to be leading when the race was over. I was surprised when they said that Herd was in first. So
yeah, he made two late passes and got himself there.
Yeah. So you know, nobody's running away with it so far, and I guess that's a positive.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Top six right now. You got Herta, Power, Pillow, Dixon, Rosenquist, and Pato O'Ward. So a real mixture of teams and some faces that we haven't kind of seen up there for a while.
Yeah, and, you know, just to go back to O'Ward, what a real missed opportunity. I mean, I think to be fair to that headline we were kind of mocking earlier, he's averaged pretty much top three the last 3 or 4 years there. So to throw as a result away the way he did yesterday really is a missed opportunity for him to be. He really should be leading the championship handily at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's shaping up, at least at this early stage, to be kind of interesting.
Well, I guess it's a positive silver lining to all this controversy that's taken place and an eventful race yesterday.
Yeah, you could say that the race yesterday is why we watch IndyCar and love it. It was really great racing. It was a really great race. You just wish they'd, you know, get the rest of it together. My God, it's just, you know, it's one gut punch a week, it seems like.
Right. Well, they probably got more eyeballs on the IndyCar series this week than they have in a long time, so I guess.
Yeah, that controversy probably didn't hurt.
Yeah. So.
Never let a crisis go to waste, as they say.
We go to the Sancio Grand Prix of Indianapolis.
Kerb, I believe I went first last time, but I'm going to go first again, if you don't mind.
I think that's a good idea based on extenuating circumstances.
Extenuating circumstances that we really can't talk about on air.
That's right.
I'll tell you what, Kerb, you go back the last 3 years, and there's quite a potpourri of names. You know, not one sticking out as like that, you know, they say, okay, you got to take that person. So I'm going to just go with the guy that I think has been driving pretty consistently, pretty cannily all year, not overextending himself, taking what the day has given him, Alex Palou.
Quite an exposition to pick the obvious candidate for the first pick. I wouldn't have picked anybody else. I agree with you.
Okay.
I'm indecisive because I think there's a hell of a lot of good candidates for this event. So I'm going to resort to my heart as I keep doing this year, and I'm going to go with Will Power.
Like Will Power here. Like Will Power this season. This is starting to smell a little bit like, you know, his surprising championship of a couple years ago.
Yeah, I agree.
Early to say, but I just like the cut of his jib. He's just taken, like, instead of just stomping his feet as, like, you know, should have gotten first. It was pretty clear, like, I'm going to take this second and go to the next race. I'm going to get it eventually.
Yeah, he seems to have the mindset again this year, the focus. So
he does. I'm going to counter that with Scott McLaughlin, who drove exceptional at Barber. And, you know, let's face it, is driving exceptional this year and seems to be have every semblance of a championship contender. So Scott McLaughlin.
Hard to go wrong there with McLaughlin this year. I'm going to go a little bit off the usual beaten path because I have a feeling you're going to pick him next anyway, and I'm going to go with Christian Lundgaard.
Okay. I believe he debuted at this course and knocked everybody at Ray Hall's socks off.
In the August race a few years ago, he was on the pole last year for this event in the May event and finished fourth, so this track has been Ray Hall's bread and butter the last couple of years. So
my heart's not in this pick, but my mind is Joseph Newgarden.
I feel like he screws up this track all the time, and I don't know why I feel that way. But
no, I think that's justified. I do.
I will agree with you that my heart's not in this pick, but I'm going to go with Pato O'Ward.
Ooh. I mean, that's an obvious choice, but hard to do after that last race, man. That was a real stinker for him.
I think somebody will get his head straight. I don't know who it'll be, but somebody will get his head straight.
All right. Well, we're leaving out a couple of heavies, as you always have to when you only pick six. Right. Scott Dixon left out. You know, he hasn't been really qualifying very well this year at all.
He hasn't qualified well in a long time. But
we left Dixon out. We left Hurt out. We left Rosenquist out. I mean, Graham Rahal could feature here. Rossi has done well in the past, and he better do well here. The guy we never mentioned, Marcus Armstrong, Kyle Kirkwood.
Do you mean Armstrong or do you mean Erickson?
I mean both of them. Armstrong had a real good feature in Barber, you have to say.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely Barber.
Yeah, sure. No, he was impressive there. I mean, you know, like I said, you only pick six, so Grosjean could be in it. You know, that's a good course for him. Pretty wide open on this one. You could probably spend way too much time thinking about it, and you'd be wrong. This would be a bad race to bet on, in my opinion.
Oh, no, it's, as you say, wide open. All right, X handle.
At Hero IndyCar, at HIRO IndyCar.
And the sponsor?
Hash Hive, coming sometime.
I want to put a shout out to South Street Diner in Boston. I'm sure we haven't gotten a check from them in a while, but I enjoyed talking to their co-owner last week. And
that's it.
Enjoy the peace and quiet for a couple weeks, everybody, before the IndyCar world erupts and doesn't slow down until the Olympics.
Yeah, I think we're going to have one between the Indy GP and the race. You know,
maybe post-qualifying?
Seems like a stretch.
Okay. Well, we'll check our schedules and see what makes the most sense for us.
I've got my own race this weekend, Curb. So.
Is it this weekend?
Yep.
Good luck.
Thank you. And we'll see how the team does. We've almost a miracle. We've kind of gotten it all together and getting the car prepped and ourselves prepped. And you feel like many times during the process that it's not going to happen. And yet we're going.
Well, I hope a new team racing together for the first time. I hope they come together and gel nicely for you.
Yeah, nothing but good results can come of this. We're sure of that.
That's right. I want to see a before and after picture of that car.
There ain't going to be much left. I can almost guarantee you that. Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck anyway. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Take care.